Welcome to The Apple Seed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. What does love look like to you? Does it look like holding hands and gazing at the moon? Does it look like hugging and kissing? How do you know when love is true and bound to last? What does that kind of love look like? Here's a story about a lovesick cowboy named Luke, who through trial and error finally figures out what true love looks like. Here's Minnesota storyteller Kevin Kling with a story he calls Love is a Rodeo.
There's a writer called O. Henry. Do you know who O. Henry is? He writes a lot of Western stories, a lot of stories from out this way. And cowboy poetry just sends me. It's so beautiful. And cowboy stories, but I'm just not a cowboy. I've been ice fishing, but it just doesn't seem to translate. So this is a story that it is a cowboy story. The C&J Ranch sat at the foothills of the Sierra. It was a beautiful spread, and the J of the C&J was for Jackson Talbot. Jackson Talbot, I guess the most outstanding thing about Jackson Talbot was there was nothing outstanding about him. There was no skeletons or sheep in the closet. He was just a wonderful, regular, simple guy, and that's the way he liked it. Well, the C of the C&J was different. That was Celia. Celia was his wife. She came from out east, and with her, she brought music, she brought dance, she brought cuisine that didn't require beans. And you wouldn't think that Stoicism and Epicureanism would call for a tranquil path, but you would be very mistaken. They fell so head over heels in love. She loved his pragmatism, and he loved her. Oh, Her wild nature just sang to his heart. He thought, if it gets any better than this, I don't even want to know about it. Well, time passed, and sure enough, little Luke came along. Little Luke in features looked like his mother, delicate and refined. But inside, he was all Talbot. He was all simple and pragmatic. Well, Luke was about, oh, I don't know, stirrup high when a fever swept through the valley, and it took rich and poor, it took good and bad, and it took Celia. And it left a hole in Jackson's heart that would never heal. It left him so hurt that his parenting style went from abstinence to micromanagement and nothing in between. It was a very difficult childhood at times. And it all came to a head one day when whispers, okay, he's one of the hired hands, whispers comes up to Jackson. He says, you know, the hired hands are going into town tonight. And Jackson said, I didn't know that, but I figured. And Whisper said, we were wondering if Luke could come with us. No. Come on, Jackson. No, he's not ready. He said, he's ready to rope. He's ready to ride the perimeter. Why can't he come into town? He said, you know why. He's just not ready for town. Whisper says, you know he's going to go into town one day, with or without us. And there's the angel or a devil just waiting to sit on them new shoulders. It's up to you. Jackson knew that he was right. He said, all right. He can go to town, but you keep your eye on him. Don't make sure he stays within eyeshot the whole time. Whisper says, I will. All of a sudden, a huge yahoo erupted from behind the barn. And that night, the hired hands and Luke hopped on their horses. They were all catwalling. They hit the end of the ranch, and they were off. And Jackson thought, oh, please let them make it alive. And they did. They made it to the barn dance. And there they were, all up against the back. They looked like hired hand wallpaper. And Luke finally got enough courage to peel himself off the wall. He walked over to the punch bowl. He picked up the ladle. Oh, and he saw a cup sticking out. So he went for the cup. He saw a hand. The hand went up an arm. It went to a neck, into the most beautiful face he'd ever seen in his life. And she said, are you going to employ that implement or what? And he just stood there. She said, Darlene, my name's Darlene. He said, I'm Luke Talbot. She goes, well, Luke Talbot, would you like to dance? And he said, I would. So they got up and they danced again. They ended up dancing together all night. And at the end of the night, he said, you know, Sunday after church, would you like to take a walk with me? And Darlene said, I would. So that Sunday, they walked after church. And the next Sunday after that, the next Sunday after that, the next after that. And finally, he turned to her and he said, you know, Darlene, you're the most beautiful person I've ever met. And Darlene pragmatically said, well, you know, beauty is like a tool, and I'm going to use mine like a crowbar to pry me out of this town unless I find me some purchase. And he goes, well, I'm going to give you some purchase. And he bent down on one knee and he said the most romantic thing he could think of. He said, would you like to put your boots up next to mine? And she said, I would, I will, and I do. And he said, then you got to come out to my farm and meet my father. So that next Sunday, after they took their walk, she came out to the farm, and there was Jackson Talbot sitting there, and they had the most wonderful dinner. And after dinner, they were sitting there, and all three of them, and Luke thought, my dad, I've never seen him so funny. I've never seen him like this before. And Jackson pointed down the hill. He says, Luke, you see that rock down there? Luke saw that rock. Had been there his whole life. It was huge. It was more like a boulder than a rock. And his dad said, why don't you show Darlene what you're made of? Pick that rock up and pitch it off into the ditch. Well, he said, okay, if I can do it for anybody, it's for Darlene. And he made his way down there and started huffing and puffing, getting a good angle on the rock. And Jackson turned to Darlene and he said, well, there's your man. She goes, yeah, that sure is. And he goes, what do you think of him? Well, yeah, he's something. And Luke at this point was crying and kicking and cussing. And he said, Jackson said, now, Darlene, do you see yourself with that man the rest of your life? She looked down at this poor guy scratching his head. He was hopping on one foot because he hurt his toe. And then Luke hopped up the hill, looked around and said, where's Darlene? His dad, she's gone. Well, where'd she go? She had to be somewhere. Where? Somewhere else. Did you say something, Dad? He goes, I didn't really have to. Now, Luke was heartbroken. He was broken for a year. He didn't make eye contact. He barely went into town. And one day, Whispers couldn't take anymore. He says, look, Luke, would you just come into town with the rest of the guys? And he says, no. He said, I can't. I just don't want to go into town. He said, please, look, you're moping around here. You're bringing morale down. If you don't do it for yourself, do it for the cattle. So he said, okay, I will if my dad. He already said yes. Ah, Luke was tricked. He'd already asked his dad. So he goes, all right, he was trapped. He said, I'll go, but I'm not dancing. Nope. I'm not talking to anyone. Nope. I'm not even looking at anyone. He goes, no, it's fine. You just go in. It's going to do your world of good. So they went to the barn dance that night. And sure enough, Luke is standing up against the wall. 5 minutes in, he goes, nope, I'm out of here. I've seen enough. And he starts to leave. And that's when he heard it. It was like a song, but it wasn't a song. It was this voice. It was a laugh. It was a laugh that sounded like a song. And he turned, and that laugh came from this shock of red hair, this beautiful green eyes, this face that lit up the sky. And he, gravity went from a law to a suggestion. He found himself floating over toward this voice. And when he landed, he said, I'm Luke. She goes, I'm Sissy. Sissy Smart. I'm from the Smart Spread just south of Socorro. He said, oh, Sissy, would you like to dance? And she said she would. So they got up and they danced. And we all know what dancing leads to. Yep, walk it on Sunday. And we all know what walking on Sunday leads to. Yep, sitting on the porch with Jackson. So there they were, the three of them, sitting on the porch with Jackson. And Luke was ahead of him, though. He'd taken that rock and pulled it up with his skid and moved it behind the outhouse. So he thought, okay, I'm safe with that rock. When all of a sudden, Jackson, he points down to the corral, and he says, you see that red roan down there? The guys had been out. The hired hands had collected all these horses that were running wild, and one of them they couldn't tame. One of them they couldn't sit on this horse. He said, why don't you go down there, Luke, and show Sissy what you're made of and ride that horse? And he said, okay, if I can do it for anybody, I can do that for her. And he'd gotten a lot older, a lot bigger, and he thought, I can ride that horse. So he walked down, he threw the rope around it, he got up on top of the back, and that horse started to buck, and it started to kick, and it started to throw, but he hung on. I mean, he hung on like a fly on the end of a frog's tongue, like a dog on a sock, like a dangle on a participle. And he would not let go. He would not let go. Now the guys are coming out of the barn. They're coming out, hey, Ryder Luke, come on, boy, you can do it. Come on, Ryder Luke. And Luke hung onto that horse. And sure enough, he wasn't letting go. When all of a sudden, that horse did something never seen before. It twisted into a corkscrew. And when it uncorked, it shot Luke sky high. And he was up in the air, emitting a sound from the hired hands that hadn't been heard since the fireworks shed exploded. Ooh, ah. And when he landed on Terra Incognita, he got up and he heard this laughter coming from up by the house, and his knee was cut and he bit his tongue wide open. He was bleeding at the mouth and he limped up to the top of the hill and he goes, "Where's Sissy?" And his dad goes, "What? Where's Sissy? Sissy Smart from the Smart Spread just south of Agora." And his dad just shook his head, gone. Oh, and now Luke was absolutely crushed. I mean, Luke was to depression what the Taj Mahal is to, it's the Taj Mahal. There's nothing like it. That's how depressed he was. He was walking around so low, he'd only go to town for two reasons. One was to go for supplies or to go to church. That was it. And one time, Luke is in town for supplies when from the church, he hears this sound, this piano sound that reminded him of being a kid. And he goes into the church and there's a young woman playing at the piano. He says, "I know that song." And she goes, "I know you know it. Your mother taught it to me. When I was a little girl, your mother taught me piano. I'm Isabel." "You're Isabel," he said. "You're really good." She goes, "Thank you." And she said, "You know, there's a barn dance tonight. Would you like to walk me over?" "No," he said, "I would not like to walk you over. I'm done with all that." She goes, "Just drop me off. It wouldn't look right me going by myself. If you just take me over, you can just leave." "Okay," he says. So he walks her over. She took one look inside and she goes, "You know, this just isn't the place for me." He said, "All right." So the two of them started to leave. And he turned to Isabel and he said, "You know, would you like to come out to my house this Sunday?" She goes, "You know, I'm not ready to walk on Sundays with anyone." He goes, No, you don't have it right." He says, "We still have that piano, and my dad would love it so much if you would come out and play those songs from that time. It would remind him of our mother." And she said, "Okay, I can do that." So on Sunday, she came out to the house, and she played the songs from that time. And afterwards, sometimes they would go for a walk. And then the next Sunday, they went for a walk. And all of a sudden, she turns to him one day, and Isabel says, "You know, Luke, I'm starting to wonder whose boots I'm going to set mine next to. I'm wondering if they're going to be yours." And he says, "I can't." He goes, "I can't do it." She goes, "Well, this will be the last Sunday I'm coming out." He goes, "I know." He said, "I understand." And so they're back up sitting on the porch, and somehow Jackson hadn't got the memo. Jackson points down to the corral, and all the cattle were going in the next day into town, and there's one they couldn't catch, and there's one they couldn't grab, red eyes, it was white, the steer. And he says, "Why don't you go down there, Luke, and you show Isabel what you're made of. Why don't you rope that cattle?" And he said, "Okay, Dad." He didn't care. "Yeah, I'll go do my best." So he walked down, and, you know, he just said, "Okay, whatever happens here is going to happen here." So he starts the loop around his head, and oh, this steer. I mean, this thing was Whiplash, Boulderdash, and Sassafras. This thing was ready for him. And this steer knew all the tricks. And he saw him looping that rope, and he knew as soon as he threw it, the steer hooked to the right, and then quick as a water bug, shot back to the left, right underneath the rope. It was one of the best bits of roping ever on the planet. He had this, and he was pulling in, and Luke had this thing, but he couldn't reach the post. He couldn't tie it off. He was too far away, and now the steer was winning, and he knew that it was just a matter of time before the steer beat him. And you know, you never know when love is going to kick in. You never know when you're going to change. And he changed into someone who loved Isabel, and he knew she was the person for him. He knew if it got any better, he didn't even want to know about it. And so he's holding on as tight as he could, trying to defeat the steer, but there was no chance. When all of a sudden he felt the rope tighten behind him, and he turns, and there's Isabel behind him, pulling on the rope with him. And the two of them were hard as they could pulling back, but even both of them couldn't hold this steer, and he knew it. But they did slow it down long enough, and him, with that delicate, refined features, sprung like a panther on the back of that steer. And before you knew it, he had flipped over, had the legs tied, and he turned to grab the iron to brand, and all of a sudden, there's Isabel with the brand. She was in there branding that steer, and they both of them, in 3 seconds, that thing was back off with the herd, and they lay there laughing. Her dress was ruined, his knee was cut, and they're laughing away. Two strong arms reached down and picked them both up. And Luke looked into the face of his father that was both laughing and crying at the same time. And Jackson Talbot said, there, son, that's the woman for you. And the two of them were married, and she turned that pleasant place into a paradise. And they lived for a long time after that, and every year they'd send the cattle into town, except for one. It's a white one with red eyes, and its brand isn't a C&J. Its brand is in the shape of a heart. Thanks.
Kevin Kling with a cowboy story in which the hero learns that the person who loves him isn't the person who will watch from a distance and judge whether he's strong enough for one challenge or another, but rather the person who will jump in and help him face the challenges, lift the burdens. Among all the other things that love means, I love that as a marker for what love looks like. It looks like help. And thinking of Kevin's story, I'm reminded of a time when I was 6 years old, just learning to read. In my classroom, just like in yours, there was a row of letters above the blackboard, capital A and lowercase a, capital B and lowercase b, and so on and so on. And I learned those letters, but I was really having trouble figuring out how it all went together. Well, for some special occasion that year, my mom bought me a little magnifying glass. I loved it. I felt like a detective with a magnifying glass in my hand. And I remember my mom inviting me to sit at the kitchen table and making sure I had the magnifying glass in my hand. And I remember her taking a piece of paper and making a show of the idea that we were going to pretend like we were looking for clues together, like detectives. And she drew a tiny, tiny little word on the paper, D-O-G, in blue ink. And she asked me if I thought I could figure out what those letters meant together if I used my detective magnifying glass. Well, those letters were just tiny, but I did. I could figure out the word dog. And my mom wrote another word, H-A-T. Well, I was on it with my magnifying glass, word after word, written in tiny, tiny letters in blue ink, letters so small that only a great detective with a magnifying glass could sort them out. Dog, and then hat, and then dad, and then even a hard word, good. I could read a little bit with the help of my mom, with the love of my mom, because love looks like help. And that's where Kevin's story took me. Where did the story take you? And who will you take along? Are you turned off by the news because of how angry and depressing it can be, but still want to engage with important issues? I know that describes me. And I want to introduce you to Top of Mind, another podcast from the BYU Radio family of shows. Each week, the Top of Mind team and award-winning host Julie Rose take one tough, important topic, and they dive deep. The goal is learning to stay open and curious when confronted with perspectives that challenge us. Best of all, every episode will leave you feeling hopeful and empowered to become a better advocate for what matters to you. top of mind. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to the Top of Mind podcast from BYU Radio. Welcome back to the Appleseed. Next up, we have a story about the heroic love that fills a family with the kind of action that could save a life. And it's also a story about the importance of remembering one another. The storyteller is Charlotte Blake Alston, and the story is called The Cowtail Switch, recorded right here in the Appleseed studio.
Thank you. This is a traditional story that comes to us from the country of Liberia. There was once a man by the name of Ogolusa who had five sons and one on the way. Now, Ogolusa was known as a great and powerful hunter. At times, he would pick up his hunting weapons and set off down the path to hunt. At other times, as his sons grew older, he would teach them the art and the skill of hunting. Well, one day, Ogolusa said goodbye to his wife, to his sons. He picked up his hunting weapons and set off down the path to hunt. Well, the sun crossed the sky and it grew dark, but Ogolusa had not come back. And the brothers turned to one another and said, "Our father has not returned." Well, they lay down to sleep that night, awoke the next morning. The sun began its journey across the sky, and still, Ogolusa had not come back. And again, the brothers turned to one another and said, "Our father has not returned." Well, days went by, weeks passed, and Ogolusa did not return. But the number of times the brothers turned to one another and said, "Our father has not returned," grew less and less, until the day came when no one spoke the name of Ogolusa. Well, several months went by, and it was time for that baby to be born, and the child appeared alert from birth, seemed to peer right into its mother's eyes, and ate, and grew strong, and pulled himself up, and toddled about the village, and took his mother's hand, and walked about, and as they walked, and he began to acquire some language, he noticed other families, girls with their mothers, boys with their fathers, and when he was able to put together enough words, he posed a question to his mother and his brothers at an evening meeting. "Where is my father?" And again, the brothers turned to one another and said, "Yes, our father did not return. Let us go and look for him." So they picked up their hunting weapons and they set off down the path that Ogolusa had taken. And they walked for a time, losing the path and finding it and losing it and finding it again, until soon they came upon the rusted hunting weapons of their father. And not far from those weapons lay what was left of Ogolusa. It appeared as though he had been attacked by an animal, and the brothers dropped to their knees and they began to wail and to moan, and their cries were so deep. The sound and the feeling, the emotion reached the heavens, and the elements heard and converged and took pity and imbued each one with a power. And the first one stood and said, "I feel I have the power to reconnect our father's bones." And he stepped forward and set about that task. The second said, "I feel I have the power to put together the muscle, the fiber, the sinew," and he set about that task. The third said, "I feel I have the power to get the blood moving through his veins once again." The fourth one said, "I feel I have the power to make his flesh whole." And the last one said, "I feel I have the power to breathe life into our father." And he breathed into Ogolusa, and Ogolusa's chest began to rise and fall. And they lifted their father, and they brought him back to the village. Well, Ogolusa stayed in his hut for 9 days, and when he emerged, he had shaved his head, and that was the custom if one was said to have returned from the land of the dead. And a feast was held. A cow was killed. The meat of the cow was cooked. The tail of the cow was given to Ogallala as a reminder of what had happened. The ends were decorated with strips of leather and cowrie shells and beads, and he walked about with that cowtail switch, thinking of what his sons had done for him, and decided he wanted to give that cowtail switch to the child who was most responsible for his return. So he gathered everyone together and announced what he was going to do. Well, you know what happened. People began to argue about who should get it. Some said it should be the one who reconnected his bones in the first place. Others said, no, the one who put together the muscle and the fiber, allowing him movement. Some said it should go to the one who got the blood coursing through his veins once again. Others, to the one who made his flesh whole, but still more, said it should be given to the one who breathed life into his father. No one could agree. No one could decide. On the third day, Ogallala reassembled them all and said, today I have made my decision. I will give this cowtail switch to my youngest child. For had he not asked the question, where is my father? I would still be lying cold and stiff in the land of the dead. And it underscored a long-held belief of the Liberian people that one is not truly dead unless he is forgotten and never spoken of again. And so it is that we must speak the stories of our lives, the stories of our histories, the possibilities of human understanding may lie cold and stiff in the land of the dead.
Charlotte Blake Alston with the cowtail switch. Can you think of a time when someone showed you they loved you by remembering you? Can you think of a time when someone showed you they love you by helping you with something? In what ways do you honor and remember the people that you love? We hope you'll share those stories. In fact, we hope you'll share them with us. Email or message us the stories that came to mind for you during this episode. Our email address is theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed@byu.edu. We might share your thoughts with our listeners. We love doing that. We want to thank Kevin Kling and Charlotte Blake Alston for their tales today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own.
The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. The rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.